Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me as always is my colleague and co-host, David Wondrich. How are you, Dave?
Doing just fine. Yourself?
I am very excited. We have a real treat, a real special guest for the episode today. Nick Offerman, known as his character Ron Swanson on Parks and Rec, the amazing TV show. Nick is a Scotch lover, a woodworker. Can't wait to chat with him about all things single malt and what he's up to. Welcome, Nick. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Welcome.
My pleasure.
You and I had talked about this a few years ago, but you know, maybe you could walk, you know, our listeners through how you discovered Lagavulin and of all of the great universe of whiskeys out there.
I grew up in a small town in Illinois, and in really every way, except maybe tools, hand tools, I was culturally ignorant. I in the 70s and 80s, you know, I just got what was on the three main TV stations. I could only get like pop radio from Chicago. I'd have to stay up late at night on Saturdays to record music that I could break dance by on my, my jam box. And similarly, when I got old enough to start consuming alcohol, only the biggest domestic brands were available at the gas station. I mean, there was a liquor store in town, but my family wasn't really that deep into it. You know, farmers just haul around a cooler full of beer. And so by the time I got to college, a pint of Guinness was the most exotic, astonishing beverage. Like I would drive an hour out of my way to find a bar that had a draft Guinness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I, you know, on a special occasion, I would, I come from Irish and Scotch lineage. And so I would maybe ask for a Jameson's. But it was, you know, whiskey was not really part of my life. And then in my late 20s, I was at a Chicago film festival, and a much more sophisticated friend of mine named Scott King, a filmmaker. We had a couple hours to kill between movies, and he said, "Let me buy you a nice glass of scotch." And I said, "Okay, great. I've read about scotch, and I've seen it consumed in the plays of Eugene O'Neill, and let's see what all the fuss is about." So he bought me a glass of Lagavulin 16, and that was, you know, 1998 or 9, and I just said, "Holy cow." I mean, it was like I still remember. I said to him, "This is it's like a campfire in a glass. It's so warming and charming and evocative." And it knocked me on my rear end. And so then, you know, after that, as my life began to involve more and more occasions to consume something like a single malt, I would say, "Well, I know this one that I really like." And I had no idea, as I traveled through the years, that I had landed upon my favorite. For whatever reason, even as it became the drink of choice for Ron Swanson on Parks and Recreation, and I was afforded the opportunity to try, you know, the full spectrum of single malts, I've never been a very picky connoisseur. If we have whiskey to drink, I'm going to be pretty happy about it. But if I have my druthers and there's Lagavulin behind the bar, that's what I'll ask for.
Well, I think you were pretty lucky, to be honest, since, you know, in the late 90s, Lagavulin was certainly not as widely as available as is today. And just the whole single malt craze was sort of getting started. So the odds of finding that so, you know, readily is it was almost meant to be, you know, like it found you almost, it seems.
That friend did you a real favor.
And now you've gone to Lagavulin several times, right? To actually visit the holy ground that is Lagavulin.
I have. When we started using it regularly on Parks and Rec, it also turned out serendipitously to be the favorite scotch of Mike Schur, the main creator of Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm. Incredible.
That's how it became Ron Swanson's scotch, is because it was the boss's scotch.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah, it is. And when we began using it with regularity, at some point we said, you know, have we heard from Lagavulin? Like, these people, generous amount of basically product placement, unsolicited. And it turns out that we hadn't, and that, you know, it was an obscure enough situation.
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
They were far enough away that it took us reaching out to them. Again, through some crazy zeitgeist movement, the bucolic rural comedy Parks and Recreation had to pack our bags and go to London if we wanted to keep Chris Pratt in like season 5, because he had been cast in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay, right. Okay.
The show was very open-handed. Some shows are very miserly, where they say, you're on my show, so if Martin Scorsese wants you, you tell him to take a hike because you belong to me.
It's like the old studio system.
Sure. I mean, and it makes sense in an old-fashioned way, but our young and open-minded administration took the opposite tack and said, if they want to make you Star-Lord on Guardians of the Galaxy, that's only going to help Parks and Recreation.
That's just smart. Yeah,
it is. I mean, the old mentality, the granddad mentality, comes from the days when I don't want you on an ABC show when you're on my NBC show,
right?
Because people can only watch one thing at a time.
Right. It was a zero-sum game at the time.
Right.
And it's not anymore.
So we, you know, said, okay, Chris, you can go become the biggest movie star in the world. And we still want you on our show. So Great. We're going to bring the show to London, England, where you're shooting Guardians of the Galaxy. And one dilemma the writers had was, Ron has been very vocal about his dislike of Europe. So what are we going to do with Ron
right
in Europe? And they said, well, there is one thing that he loves, and that is Lagavulin. So they came up with the idea for Leslie Knope, for Amy Poehler's character, to make him a scavenger hunt that ended up at the distillery. And I had, you know, I had become pretty fascinated with it. I had looked up the island of Islay, mm-hmm. which is a small, remote island off the northwest coast of Scotland.
A very wet one.
It's very wet. Yeah, I mean, it just, when you look it up, especially from Los Angeles, you're like, it doesn't seem like a place I'm ever going to get to. I mean,
well, I think part of the problem is that I'm not sure that they get TV on the island, so they may not have actually seen Park and Rec there. So until you brought a VHS cassette of it,
then they
could, or Beta, even better, they could watch
it. We brought
it.
Actually,
16mm film also works very well.
It was a reel to reel, yeah.
Reel to reel.
We projected it on the side of the sheep barn. We went there with our TV crew, and if you're a Lagavulin fan, it was finally getting your mom and dad to take you to Disneyland.
Right.
and they actually have it was very similar to Mr. Toad's Wild Ride once I tasted a couple drams of like 1967.
Unbelievable.
Did they make you shovel peat in the rain and do all that stuff that they do up there?
They didn't make me do that, but in the subsequent years that we keep making these humorous mm-hmm. advertisements for them, one of them was me cutting peat, which was fascinating.
It's a brutal job, though.
It is for sure. You know, it's the kind of thing that's it's fun to do for 15 minutes. But yeah. if that becomes your 9 to 5, I'd start reading books.
I remember going to one distillery, and they thought it'd be funny if they gave me all the parts of a barrel to assemble. And they said, "Okay, why don't you let's time you, and you can." And you know, they move the barrels around like it's like, you know, they weigh like 5 pounds, but obviously they're incredibly heavy. And they thought it was really funny for me to struggle to put all the staves in the hoops and everything, which is.
I'm sure it was funny for them alone, and I'm glad they didn't have such a sense of humor at Lagavulin.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I've been enjoying the new season of Making It. You know, your show with Amy Poehler about crafting and all the challenges. You know, Dave and I, you know, were wondering, you know, will there be a challenge with a barrel? You know, will there be one where people have to make furniture out of a barrel? Will they have to recreate the barrel? There was a cookie challenge. I was a little disappointed to see, and it wasn't a barrel challenge along these lines, but, I have hopes for later in the season.
Well, thank you. I really love our show Making It. It's such a good-hearted cheerleading session for encouraging people to make things with their loved ones and to make things with their hands. You know, be less materialistic consumers and more self-sufficient.
We're here.
Citizens and neighbors. I hear you on the barrel challenge for sure, and it's it kind of falls into the conundrum that I've been dealing with as long as I've, you know, been lucky enough to get work on TV, and people know that I'm a woodworker. I've been fielding offers to combine woodworking and television, and the problem is I actually did a show 20 years ago for Courtney Cox and David Arquette, who used to be married, and they produced a show on the Women's Entertainment Network or the Women's Entertainment Channel called Mix It Up. And it was like a Trading Spaces kind of home decorating show. And I was their wisecracking carpenter
for
a season.
Yeah, and
it was really fun. And I loved a lot about it, but what I hated was, you know, you just do the math of like each episode was 5 days. So on Monday, you go into somebody's living room and a designer says, "Okay, here's Nick." And, you know, I fall down and make people laugh. And they say, "Can you give me some crown molding? Can we build an entertainment center? And can you give me like a live edge coffee table?" And of course, I would say, "Well, of course." And then they would say, "Okay, cut. Okay, Nick, you have 3 days because we have to finish the furniture. The painter has to get it. We have to shoot the finished room on Friday." And so another detail was on a show like Trading Spaces and all these, you know, these successful HGTV shows, they have a shop in a semi that rolls up next to the house.
Right.
And then they invariably have 4 to 11 extra sets of hands who are building everything while Ty Pennington is like cracking wise. And then he drives the last screw and he's like, "What do you think about this Queen Anne high boy that I made?"
Meanwhile, George Nakashima is making the live edge table in the semi.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I was so embarrassed of all the furniture I made for that show because it was like scenery. It wasn't like furniture. Right. It was slapped together with air nails, and it was all the facade of decor.
And also, it gives people the idea that this stuff is easy and takes no time at all.
Right.
It's not.
It's the exact opposite of any woodworker knows.
That's just it. Everything about a TV schedule is the opposite of why I am a woodworker. Right. The whole point is that I can take my time and it's nice and quiet. And so I think anything that we would make out of a barrel would just take too long, simply.
I mean, I have seen a French cooper make a barrel from scratch in under an hour.
Holy cow.
I know. That guy was an animal.
It was a machine.
It was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen.
In my self-education as a woodworker, I've gone through a lot of, obviously, forms of joinery and furniture styles, and then small boats built, which led to a couple canoes. Right now I'm building instruments, ukuleles on my way to guitars. One of the things I looked at was, barrels are a huge, you know, and charismatic chapter of woodworking. So I read a couple books on coopering. And what I quickly learned was it's an astonishing skill set that requires way too much discipline and time. Like if you're going to learn to be a proper cooper, that's it.
Back in the day, the head cooper at a distillery made more money than the distillery manager.
Holy cow. You
know, that's a skill that you can't get around.
If the barrels all start leaking, that's it. I mean, it doesn't matter how good the whiskey is. It's, you know, nobody will have any to drink.
Exactly.
I was talking with the head cooper at Jameson once, and he was his fourth or fifth generation, and he was showing me his dad's tools, and all the handles were worn like almost all the way through. From 80 years, practically. His dad lived a very long time and used those tools his whole career from when he was an apprentice. You know, and just to hold these things is like, to spend that much time perfecting a craft like that is so impressive.
And it's such an unsung, heroic job. You know, the person responsible for successfully sealing casks of Jameson, my way of thinking, deserves a spot on Mount Rushmore, much more than any politician.
You know, years ago, I wanted to start a political party for people who could do things with their hands. That was the only qualification. Could be playing a musical instrument, you know, it could be, but just something. You have to be able to do something. You know, show us that you can, you know, build a set of shelves or anything like that. Just, you don't have to be great at it, but you just have to be able to do it. Because I think that's a party that would get along better than any of the ones we got now.
Oh yeah,
with which I am not very much impressed. But
so we're here to seek your nomination, Nick. We want you to run next year as the main candidate for this.
Well, I would agree to a consultancy. I do like the sound of that because people who make things with their hands. That's the connection our society has lost with nature.
Yeah.
That by simply purchasing consumer goods, we no longer have to think about where did this come from. We presume the people who made this and who sourced the ingredients are going to be cool with the forests and the soil and the watershed. Yeah. And it turns out we're finding that not everyone is actually cool. And so when we make things with our hands, we then have to know, where did this wood come from? Was it sustainably harvested? Are these people being cool to the rainforest, et cetera?
One of the most amazing things is when, you know, so many of the whiskey barrels used around the world start off in America, right? They're new barrels we use. They're filled. And I love whatever country I'm in or even a brewery in other parts of the country, and you see the old bourbon barrels, right? And occasionally you can see what distillery they came from, right? Sometimes they're sanded off if depending upon the barrel broker, but it's always cool to take a photo and be like, hey, buddy, you know where I just found your barrel? Like it's all the way like on the other side of the world. And they're like,
yeah,
oh, that's cool. That one we used, that I know that barrel stamp that was from, you know, 4 years ago, you know, whatever it was, or that was before we had our fire. Like that's incredible that barrel's there. You know, it's one of these things where these each one sort of tells a real story. And obviously the wood carries that within its fibers.
Every oak tree, you know, is going to bring a different shade of personality.
Oh, for sure. We've seen more and more distillers and brands kind of playing with this idea of local oak species, and whether one brand once did a thing where, you know, they only wanted trees on the shady side since the grain would be different. So whiskey is all about the woods. So, I mean, I don't know if Lagavulin understood when they started their relationship with you that in many ways you embody both parts of the whiskey making process, because it's so much about the wood.
I don't know that they kind of understood that either. And it's nice because it's something I never imagined when we started that we would then continue for what has become several years of our relationship, and we're still getting to unfold it. I certainly never dreamed in a million years that they would, you know, create a product that would have my name and likeness on the bottle.
Kind of awesome.
Just seems bananas.
Well, there aren't many. I mean, there's a whole Academy Awards of celebrities who are now involved in spirits, but very few of them actually bear the person's name. I mean, I think it's, you know, Frank Sinatra had, you know, there's one for him. There's, you know, there are very, you know, a few, very few. There's the Paul, you know, Paul Roget has the Winston Churchill cuvee, you know, and then there's the Nick Offerman, you know, edition. And it's there aren't many others. I mean, it's kind of incredible.
The big three.
Yeah, exactly. You, Churchill, and John Wayne, too, I think is the fourth one, so that I know of. So it's the four of you.
Achieve a level of elocution that would allow me to, like, get paying gigs in Chicago on stage. That was my goal. And so even just getting to become a Screen Actors Guild member and move to Los Angeles, that was already exceeding my hopes and expectations.
Yeah.
Then right at the end of my 20s, about a year after my first Lagavulin, I met Megan doing a play, my wife. And everything since then, for about the last 20 years, has been just hilarious frosting, where I thought I had peaked at about 30. And then I got cast as Ron Swanson. And then my life changed so drastically, including this incredibly fortunate relationship with my favorite single malt scotch.
You brought up Megan, and obviously she is one of the world's most famous martini drinkers, obviously, for her role as Karen on Will and Grace. And I always hope that you and her, you know, every night there are, like Nick and Nora Charles in the Thin Man movies, that the two of you, you know, shake up a big picture of martinis and Lagavulin. But I don't know if that's true. I mean, that's my hope. Does that take place, or?
Well, it's I don't want to spoil your reverie. So
spoil away.
I kind of want to leave it as a maybe, kid. Megan has never had a martini in her life.
Oh.
she's a star of Broadway and an incredible singer. She has a band called Nancy and Beth that's astonishing. And so she's like an athlete in that, specifically, you know, as a performer, she takes care of her instrument, including her body and her voice. But specifically as a top-notch Broadway singer, she quit using alcohol many years ago to, like, protect her pipes.
Yeah.
And I, if I ate and drank like my characters, I would no longer be alive. I mean, they have a super heroic ability to consume not only scotch, but red meat and beer and you name it, bacon. My cardiologist, I would have put three kids through college if Ron Swanson, but that's the pleasure of a fictional character. We can all, you know, we love to watch Karen drink a martini and Ron, you know, eat a platter of bacon wrapped shrimp, because we can't.
Well, I think people have the same kind of, obviously to a lesser degree, but when they find out, or they meet Dave Wondrich or myself, they assume that, you know, we are is one long happy hour, you know, from 8 a.m. till we go to sleep.
And there's the martini shaker.
It's a, you know, eye opener followed by a midday drink. And it's like, we're not Winston Churchill. So, you know, to get our work done, it's, I often have to burst a lot of bubbles about the reality of even being a drinks expert, that we don't get to drink 24/7. And there are some days that we don't drink anything. I mean, it's
nobody pays me to drink. So.
Exactly.
It's true in my business as well. People often, if you are smoking a bong in a movie or even if Ron is drinking in his office, you know, you're working in the middle of a 12-hour day on a very high-end professional job. You're doing, you know, anywhere from 6 to 10 takes of a scene. You're not going to sit there and drink 6 double scotches as much as people want that to be the way things work.
For sure.
And you guys too. And especially when you're young, you can handle things a little more, and then as we approach the autumn of our years, it's like, maybe I can write this article about this wine without drinking a Magnum.
Not this morning, anyway.
Yeah.
Is there another Lagavulin project like in the works, without, you know, revealing too much or reveal as much as you want, but you know, are there more? Do you think that we'll see more Offerman editions coming out?
Well, Offerman Edition 2.0, the Guinness cask finish, just came out a few weeks ago.
Right around Father's Day, yeah.
Doing great. It's selling really well. And I'm given to understand everybody's very happy. And so the possibility has been floated of another go-around. So I'd say we're staunchly in the maybe realm.
Okay.
I just, you know, like I said, I just keep minding my manners, hoping they won't notice that I'm still at the party. They're like, oh gosh, we should get this guy a sandwich. and so I'm always, I should say, by the way, there's two guys from Parks and Recreation, two of our main producers named Morgan Sackett and Dean Holland. They were there, you know, for everything. If you love Parks and Rec, you have them to thank much more than me. And they are the brains behind most of these commercials that we make together. So it's something that we sort of keep alive, some of the Parks and Rec gang, and have a lot of fun together. And so we've been talking about ideas for what might happen. We're always exploring the limits of how much and by what method you can char a cask.
Right.
How smoky is too smoky, you know?
Right.
And also, you know, now that we've gone into the realm of finishing our beautiful liquid in casks of other beautiful liquids, you know, we're tossing around ideas and spitballing. And frankly, they're so generous to include me, and in this version, my dad as well. We did all of these Zoom testings and, you know, sort of laboratory style mixologies with Stuart Gordon, who's the brains of the outfit over in Glasgow. We're a couple of laborers from Illinois, me and my dad, and the fact that they let us taste glass A, B, and C, and we say, well, if I had to pick one, I'll take B, you know? Mm-hmm. And they say, thank you for your discerning palate, and we say, I'm not sure what that means.
Those people aren't fancy either. I mean, there's in Scotland, there's nobody more down to earth. You know, those people are, they don't come at this with a high-hatted approach.
No, that's true. Maybe that's why I identify with them so powerfully.
I think it's often, I think, mind blowing to them when you come and you say, no, like every bar in New York, like they sell your stuff, like every liquor store. And it's like, they're like, no, I don't believe that. You know, I know you were doing your tour, before the pandemic? Will you pick up the comedy tour again? Will we see like another season of that?
That's a great question. I definitely was crushed. I was like right when the pandemic, when the lockdown happened in March of 2020, I was supposed to go play a bunch of dates in England. And then for the first time in my career, play a bunch of European cities. I had only played around, you know, England and Scotland and Ireland and Australia and New Zealand, but to play like Stockholm and Reykjavik and Oslo, I mean, oh my God. And Megan was going to come with me, you know, it was going to be a really dreamy, romantic, clumsy comedy tour that went away. At the moment, I'm lucky that I am getting to do a couple acting jobs. So, I mean, I think the brief answer is yes, there will be more touring as a humorist, but I'm not sure when. It's something, it's one of my weird problems is in my circus, I get to spin enough plates and there's a woodworking shop. I'm writing a book that's coming out this fall called Where the Deer and the Antelope Play. I'm working on, you know, plum acting roles. And so one of the plates is touring, like writing stupid, funny songs and touring as a humorist. And the trick of that is you have to book your theaters ideally like a year in advance. And so lacing it all together is a constantly shifting sort of river delta that's always eroding and finding new currents. So in brief, yes, there will be more. When I know, you'll know.
You pair your concert tour with the pub tour. And hopefully we can meet up in one of the pubs over glasses of white wine.
That sounds like the best idea I've heard this month.
Cheers. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, you guys. It's really a privilege. And I look forward to talking to you more because I'm a fan of your expertise. Thank you.
Cheers.
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 Dave and I encourage you to drink responsibly always.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.